Support for this program comes from Jazz on the Tube, the Internet's largest collection of free streamable classic jazz videos. From Miles Davis to Louis Armstrong, from Thelonious Monk to Duke Ellington, you'll find it all on jazzonthetube.com. Start your free subscription today.
Hi, and welcome to Jazz Talk, a Jazz on the Tube podcast. My name is Ken McCarthy, and this is where we talk with people who are doing important work that supports and illuminates the music we love. The writers, the scholars, the educators, the filmmakers, the producers, and more. And we're going to be interviewing Bobby Sanabria about a project that we've actually talked about quite a bit on Jazz on the Tube. We talked about it before the debut. We talked about it when there was a free live streaming from Jazz at Lincoln Center, and now, finally, at last, this beautiful piece of music is going to come out on CD this July 20th, 2018. And you may be wondering, well, why are you giving so much attention to this piece? Well, I've got some reasons, and I jotted them down. Number one, this is the 100th anniversary of the birth of, and you're going to have to tell me the right way to pronounce his last name, Bernstein.
No, it's Bernstein.
Okay, I know there's a right way and a wrong way. So, yep.
But everybody, including myself, has made that mistake and always does. So you're part of a big club.
Okay, great. So we'll be working on making that club smaller. So it's Bernstein, Leonard Bernstein, and it's his 100th. If he were alive today, it would be his 100th birthday. He was obviously not a jazz musician, but he was a great appreciator and respecter of jazz, and that was very important when he was head of Lincoln Center. You know, there was that back in that era, jazz didn't really get a lot of support at the upper cultural levels, and he changed the direction of that. One of the things he did was appoint David Amram to be composer in residence, and that was sort of a tip of the hat to the jazz world. David is certainly part of that world. This is also a piece of music that is so important to American music history, West Side Story. It's one of the great, great, great compositions in America, and its 60th anniversary was last year. It is the yardstick and the calendar aside, it is just a fantastic piece of music, and it's very interesting what Bobby and company have done with it, which is to revisit it, revise it, revision it with Latin rhythms. And especially now, it's more important than ever after what's happened in Puerto Rico, after what's happened at the border. You know, everybody that loves music and loves humanity, we really need to become way more conscious of our Latin American brothers and sisters. And so this project could not come at a better time. And as if all that wasn't enough, the profits from this CD are going to go to Puerto Rico Relief. So this is a very important project on many, many dimensions. And what I want to talk with Bobby about is how this even came to be and the incredible work, behind the scenes work to put this together. Now, we're just going to enjoy the music, and that's great. That's the way it should be. But I'm sure a lot of thinking and decision making and calculations and meetings and hard work went behind the scenes to make this possible. So my first question, Bobby, is where did this idea come from to take West Side Story and infuse it with Latin rhythms?
Well, first of all, thanks so much, Ken, for having me as a guest. It's always a privilege to speak with you and share my thoughts with your listeners. This project started about 10 years ago when I did a concert at the Manhattan School of Music in honor of movie soundtracks with the Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra. The then president of the school, Dr. Robert Sirota, would devote every year to a different theme. And that year, the theme was movies. So everybody in the school that was dealing with any types of large ensembles for big concerts at the large auditorium, their mission was to program, their assignment was to program music with that theme. So I did a bunch of different movie soundtracks, excerpts from different movie soundtracks like The Odd Couple, et cetera. And I figured, wow, what would the best way to close would be the gym scene with the mambo in West Side Story, but obviously do a new arrangement on it. So I entrusted my then student, Danny Rivera, to write an arrangement on it. Well, actually, he was a former student at the school and a former member of the orchestra. I entrusted him to write an arrangement on it. And the only thing I told him was make sure it's in clave. You know, it's the mantra of Afro-Cuban music, Puerto Rican and Dominican music. It's the building, rhythmic building block that we use. So to make a long story short, it was a tour de force and the crowd erupted in a standing ovation, et cetera, et cetera. So then I put that in the back of my head. I said, you know, well, I'm going to come back to this later on. And every semester I'm entrusted with putting together a theme. So I realized that 3 years ago, I realized that the 60th anniversary was coming up, my 60th birthday. I put two and two together. So I said, wow, what a great way to celebrate my 60th birthday. And obviously with the 60th anniversary of West Side Story premiering on Broadway, which premiered, I believe it was September 26th in 1957. Might have the date slightly wrong, but the year is definitely the year I was born. So then I started the process of getting the music together, and I must say the music for West Side Story is the most difficult music that has ever been written for a Broadway show. It stands the test of time still. And the only thing that I would disagree with you in terms of with talking about Maestro Bernstein, I believe he was in a sense a jazz musician because he loved jazz. He utilized jazz a lot in his compositional technique, and he understood jazz well, and he could improvise on piano.
Okay.
He would have had a fabulous career by himself if he just devoted himself to be a concert pianist, but his instrument was really the orchestra. And according to him, his own thoughts, he found composing so difficult, which I find that hard to believe because he was so inventive and creative. And what's amazing about West Side Story is it's completely inspired by jazz. If you hear the opening whistle, the tritone that everybody knows, that those first two notes are what we call in music the tritone. It's technique is called an augmented fourth or diminished fifth. It was called the devil's interval by the Catholic Church because it gives you this feeling of suspended animation and eeriness. And it has to resolve, and it resolves on that last note. So you get ba ba, and it has to resolve somehow, and it resolves on ba, which is the fifth of the scale, of a major scale. So he uses those first two notes. Well, he uses all three notes to write out the whole show. It's the first two notes are called the tritone because they split the octave completely in half. So anyway. The whole show is based off those three notes. You hear it in cool. You hear it in Maria. You know, it's all over the place.
Okay.
If you think of Beethoven's fifth, and then he bases the whole symphony on that. Same thing with this, with West Side Story. Just his ingeniousness. But what people don't know is that those three notes, you know where he gets them from?
Mm-hmm.
From his Jewish culture, from the shofar, the ram's horn. Those are the three notes that are blown on that horn as a call to war. And so when anybody, at that time, anybody that was Jewish that saw the show on Broadway, and then later on in the movie, when they heard those whistles, they would smile to themselves because they knew what that was. And Bernstein transfers that to the whistles of the streets. And anybody that's Jewish knows, oh, there's going to be a conflict. There's going to be a war because those are the notes that are blown by the shofar. So he was ingenious as a composer and utilized jazz in many ways in everything that he did, from Candide to like the music that he wrote for movies like On the Waterfront, et cetera, et cetera. So I would name him as the five greatest composers that have used jazz as an inspiration, going back to the 19th century to Luis Monroe Gottschalk. Then you have George Gershwin. Then you have Duke Ellington. Then you have Don Ellis. Mm-hmm. And obviously Bernstein is in it. And in terms of being concrete musician, in my opinion, he's the greatest musician this country has produced. So to do this, it was a big, big challenge. And in the original show, the Latin music that he uses, because he was a lover of all things Latin, his wife was Felicia Montealegre. She was born in Costa Rica and raised in Chile. And they frequented the Palladium Ballroom a lot. So everybody knows the iconic mambo in the gym scene. And then there's a little dance ballet that Tony and Maria do right after they see each other. He calls that in the show Cha-Cha-Cha. And then there's the song America, the iconic song America, which is done to a Mexican rhythm called Huapango. Well, people ask me all the time, well, why would he use a Mexican rhythm and it's Puerto Ricans on the roof? I go, first of all, the Huapango is very playful. It's a satiric song form. And second, that was a very natural thing because at that time, Mexican cinema was huge all over Latin America. It was at its height. It rivaled Hollywood in terms of output of movies. And in Hispanic theaters, Spanish language theaters in New York City, every Puerto Rican saw Mexican movies. So my parents were very well aware of that. They used to take us to see those movies when we were kids. So that music became part of the New Yorkian experience in New York City, and Bernstein knew that. So, you know, again, his ingeniousness.
Wow, this is great. So, you know, the rhythms and musics don't stop at the border, especially in Latin America, right? You hear Cuban music in Mexico and Mexican music in Puerto Rico, and, you know, it's that's great.
Right, and it showed the cosmopolitan nature of the Puerto Rican community, the New York Puerto Rican community. And America is an indictment of colonialism as well, because it goes back and forth between Bernardo and Anita. She's extolling the virtues of America, why she loves America. She can get a car, you know, she can get a Cadillac, she can get a washing machine. And she goes, everything's all right in America. But then Bernardo gives it a reality check and says, yeah, if the last line is, if you're all white in America.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an indictment of colonialism and the American hypocrisy in terms of the way it treats its immigrants. And in the case of the Puerto Ricans, it's even more complex because we're not immigrants. We're migrants. We're U.S. citizens since 1917. So it gets even more complicated. And then if you look at the show, all the Puerto Ricans speak in complete sentence, the white gang, the Jets, they speak in these, those, et cetera, and incomplete sentences. The Puerto Ricans have jobs. Maria works at a dress shop, and who owns the dress shop? A Puerto Rican woman. You know, mm-hmm. Bernardo has a job. The rest of the Sharks have jobs. So I'm saying all this because there's a lot of people in the Puerto Rican intellectual community criticize West Side Story, and they down it, and they say it's an insulting representation of us. But my counter argument is that they're completely wrong and they're missing the point. There's even Santeria references in West Side
mm-hmm.
Story. For example,
mm-hmm.
when you see, well, first of all, Elegua's number is 3. And then the opening whistle, there's 3 notes. And then,
mm-hmm.
and it's very mysterious as Elegua is. And he's the avatar of Ache, all this mysterious, powerful energy force throughout the universe. And Riff starts snapping his fingers. You see, you know, you see them snapping his fingers. The show starts. The music starts. They walk by a little girl drawing concentric circles in chalk in the playground. And that's definitely an Elegua symbol because Elegua is always represented as a child. And the concentric circles are an Elegua image as well. And Bernardo finally comes out, and he's dressed in what? Black and red, the colors of Elegua.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
He's a warrior, you know, right away. And he's the most handsome of all of the characters in the movie, et cetera. So there's a lot of interesting nuances in the movie and that developed, obviously, from the original Broadway show. And here's another nuanced thing, that subtle thing that most people miss. In the gym scene, there's a gentleman by the name of Mr. Gladhand. He's the social worker. And he wants to get the two gangs together. He's trying to, you know, make peace with them. He goes, all right, boys and girls, let's make concentric circles. And when the music starts, you know, you're going to walk around. And when it stops, whoever's in front of you at the time, you dance with, you know. So, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, what happens is Riff, the leader of the Jets, he goes to his girlfriend. He just motions with his head, like ordering his girlfriend over, who's her character's name is Gina. So he motions to her, like ordering her to come over to him. In contrast, Bernardo, he extends his hand out to Anita very elegantly, like a caballero, like a gentleman. She raises her skirt with one hand, comes over, makes one turn, and curtsies to him, and they embrace. So, in other words, he's respectful to her, and the motion that she does is the same movement that you do in the paseo, which is the introductory section of the Puerto Rican danza or the Cuban danzón. So that they show, you know, they show that the Puerto Ricans have elegance, style, and they respect women as well. So,
this would have been. Sorry to interrupt. Remember, this was done 60 years ago.
If things are
bad now, you know, you can only imagine what it was like 60 years ago. And I love the fact you call him Maestro. You know, Maestro Bernstein, to use his clout to create a Broadway piece that extols the virtues of the Puerto Rican culture and society. I mean, what a farsighted guy. I mean, besides being a great artist, I mean, and you're right, the music is unbelievable, but besides being a great artist, this had to be a social commentary by him as well.
Oh yeah. The whole show is a social commentary. It's obviously based on Romeo and Juliet, but set amongst the gang culture of the 1950s. Which was very, you know, New York was very, there was a territorial imperative in New York City. You did not walk in certain neighborhoods without paying a price or being given permission. It was very much like, as I just said, use that term, a territorial imperative. You just didn't do that. Tito Puente talks about that. When he was a kid, he used to go to get his drum lessons from a black gentleman by the name of Mr. Williams in West Harlem. Well, he lived in East Harlem, so he told me when he took his lesson, he had to run to his lesson because he'd get his butt kicked, you know, because he wasn't from that neighborhood. And then when he went back, he'd get his butt kicked if he got caught. So that was, he's a kid growing up in the 1930s. And, imagine that you have to, run to your lesson.
But it was a little bit like that when I was growing up in New York. I mean,
yeah, me too. I mean, it was just like that. Or if somebody vouched for you, then that was, hey, he's cool, let him through, people talk about gated communities. That's the ghetto hood version of gated community.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of neighborhoods that you just did not wander into unless you were with somebody from that neighborhood.
Yeah. Right? There's so many nuanced things in West Side Story. For example, look at the scene in the candy store. When the Sharks and the Jets are meeting to define terms as far as the Rumble is going to be concerned. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Lieutenant Shrek walks in and he starts asking, okay, tell me where the Rumble is going to be, Bernardo and everything. And the Puerto Ricans just clam up and they don't say anything. And he insults them, as half-breeds, which is a reference to a multiracial character being Puerto Rican. And then the Puerto Ricans walk out, and what do they whistle? My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty. They whistle it. In the Broadway show, when they whistled it, they also gave the finger. But they didn't do that in the movies. But the point is made. So it's an indictment of the hypocrisy of what people, especially on the right, extol about America. And then, so they leave. So then Lieutenant Shrink goes to the white gang, the Jets. Tell me where the Rumble is. Come on, man, I'm on your side. And this, that, and the other. And he gets frustrated, and then he starts insulting the Jets. And it culminates, and he goes, you're just as dumb as the ignorant immigrant scum that you come from. So Lieutenant Shrank is not only a racist, but he's an equal opportunity racist. And then it culminates with him saying, insulting them little by little. And then finally he insults the Italian-American character action. He goes, how's the action on your mother's side of the street action? Which is the ultimate insult in the hood, saying something about somebody's mother. You know? Mm-hmm. And then the kind Jewish candy store owner, Doc, he goes, how could you speak that way, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes, you tired dealing with hoodlums and see what it does to you. So he's a victim himself in many ways, you know, because Schrenk's job is just to keep peace in the neighborhood. That's all he wants. But, you know, the job has just gotten to him. He's become a victim himself of the neighborhood.
And 60 years later, really not a whole lot has changed. I mean, this is an absolutely current representation of what things are like still.
Well, the problem is now that we're killing each other in our communities. For example, now that we're speaking at the time of this interview, 2 weeks ago, a young man was killed in the Bronx, Belmont section of the Bronx by a Dominican gang. And he was hacked to death with machetes and knives, which is really brutal. And obviously, anybody can shoot a gun, but to do that is something really sociopathic and psychopathic. So, and this was not two warring gangs. This was just a revenge killing. The kid, unfortunately, they mistook him for the real target that they were going after. Everybody loses. The kid's family, those kids that did the act, they got caught. And the kid that they really wanted to kill, well, he's disappeared. Who knows where he's at? And then the community has blamed, in their frustration, in their righteous anger, unfortunately, blames the bodega owner where it happened. Because they said that he didn't help, and they want the bodega owner out of the community. The hospital that was a half a block away, where the kid ran to, the security guard told him, I can't help you because insurance, the rules at the hospital say I can't touch you and help you up. You got to walk inside to the emergency room yourself. I mean, so the community's pissed off at the hospital. And everybody's just stunned, and you know, and of course the ultimate victim is the family of the young man. And the ironic thing is, the young man wanted to be a police officer.
I remember reading that. Wow.
But we're still dealing with all this crazy thing, and the show is basically about one thing: how do you deal with hate? And so what I did with the show, with the music, is the show originally was set in 1957, and the crux is, the, you know, Maria and Tony, the star-crossed lovers, they're from different ethnic racial groups, and they fall in love despite all of this hate. And as you well know in the show, anybody knows the show, there's three murders, an attempted rape, there's interracial, interethnic gang war, etc. I mean, the original producer, Cheryl Crawford, she pulled out of the show. She was the biggest producer at the time in Broadway. And 6 weeks before rehearsal was supposed to start, she pulls out. And luckily, Harold Prince saved it, and he produced it. But in any case, the show, when it premiered, it was stunning. And people were talking about the, on every level, the music, everything, the act. See, because people don't understand, West Side Story elevated the chops that somebody needed to do a Broadway show, because, first of all, one of the criticisms that Cheryl Crawford has, and many others, was the music is too difficult. How are you going to get people to sing five-part contrapuntal harmony, you know, in a song like Tonight, where you hear all that contrapuntal harmony happening and all those counter melodies going on? Then you got to be able to dance. Then you got to be able to act. And in the history of theater, there had always been, going back to vaudeville, there had always been people that could sing, act, dance, but not on the level that was required for West Side Story, because the music was so difficult. So they had to. So they said, you'll never be able to get actors that could dance and sing like that, or vice versa. But it's a testimony to the moxie that these guys had, Arthur Lawrence, Maestro Bernstein, Maestro Joan Robbins, and a young Stephen Sondheim, that they stuck with it and believed in it. So, I mean, and we're all the better for it. But we're still, you know, we still haven't learned the lessons from it. That's why I think more people need to see West Side Story today, and more young people especially. So with this new reimagining of it, from my perspective, now the sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of those whites that fled the neighborhoods that because they feared blacks and Puerto Ricans at the time, now they want those neighborhoods back. And so the show is dealing with gentrification. And now when they come into the community, hey, it's not just Puerto Ricans and blacks. It's Haitians, it's Dominicans, it's Colombians, it's Mexicans, it's everybody. So that was my vision in terms of addressing the music. And that's why all these rhythms are in the show, the way I've reinterpreted. For example, we use Puerto Rican rhythms like bomba sica and bomba yuba. These were rhythms that Maestro Bernstein hadn't been exposed to because they hadn't been adapted to the band format. And 1955 in Puerto Rico is when Rafael Cortijo starts beginning to adapt the rhythms of bomba, which are our native Afro-Puerto Rican rhythms, to the dance band format. So he had just started doing that. So Maestro Bernstein is still enthralled by what's happening in New York at the time, which is big band Afro-Cuban music, as done by Machito, Tito Puente, and Tito Rodriguez, the big three. And he frequented the Palladium Ballroom with his wife. So he knew that music intimately. And that's what anybody from Puerto Rico that came from Puerto Rico to New York City at that time, or anybody that had been born of Puerto Rican descent during that time period, that's what that was the music you danced to. You danced Puerto Rican music, you danced to Afro-Cuban mambo at the time. But the way we interpret it in New York, which is with jazz. So the scene of the gym with the mambo resonates with me still to this day and everybody else, because I lived that. I've done so many gigs in gyms, you know, playing in the South Bronx, South Brooklyn, in Manhattan. And that's the music we dance and listen to. And I addressed what I talked about before with the huapango. You know, we knew that music intimately well as Puerto Ricans. So the movie really shows the cosmopolitan nature of our experience in New York City. But a lot of critics, they have these knee-jerk reactions. And I tell you one thing, most of those critics are from the island. And how could they even know anything of what it is to be a New Yorican? They haven't been here. They haven't grown up like I did, or anybody else that has grown up here. That's our experience, man. My mother was spat upon, called a spick, and, you know, my father too, when he came here. They went through all of that. But like all people that are strong, they were very dignified. And they fought that with resilience and with their culture. And that's the main commentary about this reimagining, that I want people to realize that New York City was literally transformed by the Puerto Rican community. Artistically, poetically, in theater, drama, in poetry, dance, and of course, and you know, in painting, visual arts, and of course, and music.
Well, you know, I'm going to put in a plug for something that I'm doing. Elena Martinez, your wife, put together an amazing video, an amazing documentary called From Mambo to Hip Hop. Which we're going to be showing Saturday, August 4th in what's called the Old Dutch Church. It's also known as the Cathedral of Kingston. And it's really the geographic, cultural, spiritual center of all of Ulster County, which is a county up here upstate. And we're going to be showing that film, From Mambo to Hip Hop. And the reason we're doing it, it's a fundraiser for Puerto Rico. And the reason we're doing it is we want to educate big band lovers that Puerto Rican musicians had a huge impact on big bands in the 50s. Some of them were old enough to remember, actually danced at the Palladium. I do meet people who were at the Palladium. And then we want to educate the young people who love rap so much that that all came out of hip hop, and that was contributed to greatly by the Puerto Ricans of New York. So just in that one little, you know, and those are the two most popular musics in America, right? We have mambo, which I believe there's a lot of mambo roots in rock and roll. People don't get it. It takes a while explain it.
Oh yes, most definitely. You, I could do I've done clinics on that.
Yeah, you know, so you know
the rhythms.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go from everything from the early stuff in Chuck Berry's, you know, like from Chuck Berry all the way on, you know, Elvis, everything. I mean, it's irrefutable.
So
of course, Bo Diddley with the clave, you know.
Yeah, right.
It's all in there like a bag of chips.
Yeah,
like, it's all that in a bag of chips, like you said, the Bronx.
Exactly. And so those are our two most commercially popular musics, rock and rap. And Puerto Rican musicians had a hand in the roots of those music. So that's just one tiny slice of the Puerto Rican contribution. So we're not just, you know, asking for money. We're saying, well, look at who our Puerto Rican neighbors are. Look at what they've contributed. You know, this is, so anyway, that's our project, August 4th. If anybody's listening and can be there 2 p.m. Saturday, August 4th, it's going to be fun. Then we're going to have reception afterwards where the DJ is going to play exclusively Puerto Rican music. Bomba, plena, Latin jazz, hip-hop.
Right, right.
You name it. It's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. So, hey, let's talk about the arrangers on this and do a shout-out to them, because I got to hear – I've heard the piece when it was streamed live on Jazz at Lincoln Center, streamed it live, which was really a treat. And mm-hmm. I want to tell everybody, I'm not just doing this, you know, I'm not enthusiastic about this just because it's a social commentary, though it is. I'm enthusiastic about it because the music is stunning. It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece, this revision.
Oh, thank you so much.
I was stunned. I had goosebumps when I was watching it. Can you tell people a little bit about some of the rhythms? I know there's a lot of them in there, but can you talk about some of them, where they came from, their names, and maybe since you're a drummer, you could, I don't know if you have something you could tap on, we could hear, you know, whatever is feasible.
Right. Well, in terms of the arrangers, the secret of any big band, and even in small groups too, are the arrangers. The best small groups, from, you know, Cannonball Adderley to Miles to Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, to any big band, and of course symphony orchestra, the secret weapon is always the arrangers, and they never get enough credit. So there were 9 arrangers. If you include me, that's 10. So we had, and many of them were former students of mine or current students. For example, we had Matt Wong from the Manhattan School of Music, who's still a current student there. We have Nate Sparks, who was a graduate of the Juilliard School of Music, but he's performed with the Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra at Manhattan School of Music. Then we have, who else? We have from internally in the band, we have Jeff Lederer, the great tenor saxophonist, who unfortunately couldn't perform with us at Dizzy's because he was on tour in Portugal with Matt Wilson at the time, but he contributed the arrangement to America. Matt did the arrangement, the beautiful arrangement of Tonight. Then Danny Rivera, who was a former student of mine at Manhattan School of Music, graduated with his master's. He contributed the arrangement to the gym scene, the Mambo gym scene, which, as many of you remember, it opens up with a blues like Count Basie, you know, and then it morphs into the Mambo. Mm-hmm. And then we had, who else? We had Eugene Marlowe, who did the arrangement of Maria, and I arranged the vocals and the rhythm in there with the bata drums. Mm-hmm. And Gene did a beautiful job there, you know, converting Maria into this rhythm that we inherited from the Yoruba people in Nigeria that was brought to Cuba during the colonial period, known as Bembe, which is 6/8. And if I could, let me see if I could tap this out.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
I'll tap out the main bell rhythm. This 1 2 3 4 5 6 1 2 3 4 5 6 1 2 3 4 5 6 1 2 3 4 5 6. So that's the rhythm that's happening there. And when we perform this, a lot of people from the Santeria community, because that rhythm is used in the religious, Afro-religious ceremonies of Santeria, which the religion comes from the Yoruba people in Nigeria, it's originally known as Ifa, they come up to me with smiles on their face, and they go, man, I can't believe it, what you did with Maria, you know.
Uh-huh,
And we embodied, Maria embodies the spirit of Ochun, the Yoruba deity of love and beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the deity of the rivers, the Orisha of the rivers. And Tony is represented by Chango, who is the lord of the drum and dance. And he also is the lord of male sexual virility. And he's, Ochun is his most, he's a player, you know, but his most passionate lover is Ochun. So I utilized traditional chants in the arrangement. I inserted them in there to represent the two lovers. So that's one of the, that's an example of one of the innovative things that we did with the music. And Gene framed it with this beautiful haunting, with these beautiful haunting chords, et cetera, around it. And then what else? Who else? Andrew Neasley, who was again another former student of mine at the Manhattan School of Music. He's got his master's degree, and he's a member of the orchestra. He's Danny, as I must say, he's our baritone saxophone player. Andrew is our fourth trumpet. He's a fantastic arranger as well, and he did Cool. And Cool is interesting because what we did with Cool is I inserted some elements of hip-hop in there as a transitional device that you'll hear. But it's basically a big band swing number, like the Count Basie Orchestra, roaring. And Bernstein, Maestro Bernstein, used jazz to as an identity marker, not only for the whole city of New York, but as an identity marker for the Jets, and in particularly bebop. So you'll hear that throughout the reinterpretation. And then there's Nico Theobald, who was a student at the Manhattan School of Music. He's from Europe, and he was a master's degree candidate at the school and at Manhattan. And he subbed one day in the band, just subbed. And he goes, he loved the music and everything. And he go, we were just talking, and I go, oh, so you're a performance major? He goes, no, I'm a composition and arranging major.
Oh.
And I go, wow, would you be interested in writing something for the orchestra? So he said, well, what did you have in mind? I go, well, I'm recreating West Side Story. So he, you know, this is where I come in, because he starts talking to me, and I go, I want you to do the Jet song. Listen to it first.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, man, I don't know how to do this, whatever. I go, well, listen, the Jets are represented by jazz. Obviously, you have to refer to the original melody, but the Puerto Ricans, you know, in the show, they're identified by the mambo in the gym scene, but we have our own rhythms from the island, and one of them is Sika, from Bomba Sika, which is the most common rhythm adapted by Rafael Cortillo, that gentleman I mentioned before, who was the first to adapt Afro-Puerto Rican rhythms from the Bomba tradition to the dance band. So use that as an identity marker for the Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear this, it's very ingenious what he did, because, and there's even a small little transitional section that I inserted, because it starts off with a shuffle rhythm, which is the root of rock and roll, and rock and roll was starting to happen by 1955. But interesting enough, Bernstein didn't use that. He wanted to keep it really hip, because what identifies New York City is not rock and roll, but jazz. So he kept away from that. But one of the roots of rock in terms of rhythmic is the shuffle. So when you hear me, I start off with the shuffle on the drum set, and then it takes off into the original melody. But then it goes into a double time section with the saxophones doing double time figures a la bebop. But the rhythm that I'm playing is rhythm from northeastern Brazil, Bayong, that, oddly enough, that when you adapt it to the drum set, the hi-hat goes, but underneath, you have this bass drum going like this. Like that. So you hear that as a transitional device, and then it explodes into jazz. And the the Jets are represented by the trombone, the saxophone, and the trumpet, three of the main characters, with ice, riff, and action. And then all of a sudden what happens is, so they dominate the neighborhood, right? They're the kings of the park. But all of a sudden, they meet the Puerto Ricans. And the Puerto Ricans explode with the rhythm of Bomba Sica. And you hear me on the, like you heard me on the live broadcast. I yell out, freaking Puerto Ricans, which is the Jets. They're pissed off because, where did they appear from? You know, who are these people, man? Oh, God. And then it explodes into this rhythm that represents our African roots, and it turns into a carnival in the playground. So, but then the Jets have the last word, you know, because they basically rule the park. So that's one of the examples of some of the innovative things we did in the score. But Nico did a fabulous job in terms of using the power of the pen, or the pencil, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some other great arrangers on the who else? Andrew Neasley. Oh, Jeremy Fletcher. Jeremy Fletcher, again, another former student of mine from the Manhattan School of Music. Interesting story about him. He was a composition and arranging major as well. And same, he comes up to me, I'd like to write something for the band, because at the time he was a center player in the band. And I said, what do you have in mind? He goes, well, I got original composition. I go, no, forget about that. You need to get your foot wet first. I want you to write an arrangement on Bésame Mucho. And it's probably the most recorded bolero ever.
Mm-hmm.
And give him some historical background on the piece. And I said, there's a trick with the clave. You got to figure out, this is your assignment, you know, because it's, you know, when I do this, it's for them to learn. You got to figure out what the clave of the tune is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want an intro into that in the opposite clave, and then you got to, you know, come into the tune and make the transition smoothly, what we call clave counterpoint. And I want you to reharmonize it so that it's a vehicle for whoever you're going to pick to be the soloist, the jazz soloist on it. So he did a beautiful job. And that arrangement, you hear it on the Big Band Urban Folktales album, which came out in 2007, and was nominated for a Grammy with my Multiverse Big Band. So those are Jeremy's roots, and he did a beautiful job on the prologue, the epilogue, a fabulous job on Officer Crumpy, fabulous job. He also did Somewhere, and he did, what else did he do? Oh, One Hand, One Heart. And just to give you an example, One Hand, One Heart was the one tune that I wanted to be sung. But when I went to the Bernstein office to ask them permission, they said, you know, Bobby, if you want to do that, then we have to ask Stephen Sondheim, and then we got to get a hold of Arthur Lawrence, his estate, and et cetera. So it's going to be a pain in the butt. Stephen Sondheim is really cool, but he takes months to get back to you. Literally months. So I said, okay, we'll just make it instrumental. And Jeremy did a beautiful job, because what he did was he used if you talked about Brazilian music, One Hand, One Heart would be a samba canção. A samba canção is the equivalent to a Cuban bolero, but in Brazilian music. There's songs about love, and they're slow, and they use, to give anybody a reference point, they would use like the rhythm of, that somebody would call a bossa nova.
So he
does it like that, but then he used elements of the bolero feeling, the Cuban bolero feeling movement from the 1950s. And the feeling movement in Cuba was these troubadours they were inspired by Frank Sinatra and Rosemary Clooney, all the great crooners of the day, Billie Holiday, and they would write boleros, romantic ballads, based on the chord changes of jazz standards. So like Tu Mi Delirio by Sopotea de la Luz from Cuba is based on what? The harmonies of Here's That Rainy Day.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. So he use some of those elements in One Hand, One Heart. So, but the rhythm is bossa nova. And then at the very end, it goes into a Son Monturo to feature our flute piccolo specialist, Gabriel Garo, who happens to be the youngest member of the orchestra. So it was very ingenious what he did. And then the prologue, well, everybody remembers the whistle at the beginning and then the snapping of the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
But then
mm-hmm.
what happens is you hear the clave. And you right away, you know, oh, man, this is a different West Side Story. It's a different neighborhood
mm-hmm,
than
mm-hmm.
1957. So where the whites were the dominant group in 1957, now it's who? The Puerto Ricans.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones in charge of the neighborhood now. But, of course, the whites want the neighborhood back. You know, so this whole issue of gentrification. So he did the original melody of the prologue is based on a three-bar riff that Bernstein writes. And what is Alegua's number? Three.
Three.
the three notes of the whistle. And then it's all mysterious and haunting and eerie and everything. It's like the Twilight Zone. That's the domain of Alegua. You're in his house right now. The clave is a two-bar pattern, but the riff is three bars. So it keeps inverting in on itself within the structure of the clave. And
mm-hmm.
through his knowledge of clave that he learned from me, he manipulates it all to be all in clave. And it's really hip. It's what Alegua is. You know, he's a trickster, and he's the avatar of Ache, this energy force that permeates the whole universe, and you have to deal with him first.
Mm-hmm.
So he opens up the show in our version of it. But he did that mm-hmm. same thing in the original, like as I said before, because Bernardo comes out dressed in black and red. Anybody who's a santero, is a follower of the religion, notices that right away. Most
mm-hmm.
people don't. But this is what great art does. It's nuance. You have to look at the details, the fine points. You can't just look at the Mona Lisa and say, hey, wow, she's not too good looking. And what's the big deal about the picture? You have to look at it and see all the nuances that are happening. People always talk about it looks like she's following you, man, when you go from one side of the room to the other, you know?
Maestro Bernstein was an incredibly informed man. You know, he really made an effort to inform himself about all kinds of different things. And, you know, we're talking today because very soon, July 20th, I believe, 2018, this project, West Side Story, and what's the formal title? I've been following it so long, I never even thought to ask, what's the formal?
West Side Story Reimagined.
West Side Story Reimagined. And the label that's putting this out?
Is Jazz Heads. And Randy Klein is the president, and I have to really thank him because he really championed the idea of making most of the money from the proceeds of the CD to go to Puerto Rico for the musicians. And it was like a joint idea between us, but he really championed it. And I have to thank him because he's done this type of thing before. Like, for example, the money that's raised from the albums that we've done with the Manhattan School of Music Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra, that money goes to a scholarship fund at the school for the from the Tito Puente Masterworks Live, from the Kenya Revisited Live, and from the Kaviva Harlem albums. So when you get those albums, you're helping jazz education. And in this case, with this recording, it's very heartfelt because obviously Puerto Rico is my ancestral homeland. I was born and raised in New York City, but my parents are from the island, and I'm what they call a New Yorker. So
mm-hmm.
we're very proud of our culture, our history. And as I said, I want people to know the contributions we've made to New York City. That we literally transformed the city, making it a vibrant, you know, New York is a Caribbean city right now.
Yes, I mean, and you know, you don't really realize that until you go to the Caribbean, and then you come back to New York, and you realize, my God, This is a Caribbean city. We're the northernmost Caribbean city in the world.
Right. I guess you could say that as a joke now. I mean, I used to say New Orleans was the northernmost city of the Caribbean, but
yeah.
I guess now you have to say it's New York, man. You
know, absolutely. I mean, and you know, you're going to have a concert at
Lincoln Center out of doors.
That's going to be great.
We're doing a big concert there. In terms of, we're doing the West Side Story reimagined, all of the music there. And also, this will be very interesting because, to my knowledge, it hasn't really been done in jazz or in Latin jazz or Latin music, for that matter. There's going to be images projected behind us. So there'll be a visual component. And the images are by Seis del Sur, Six from the South. These are six world-renowned photographers that all happen to be New Yorkers, and they all happen to be from the South Bronx. So David Gonzalez is one of them. He's a reporter and a photographer New York Times. For the New York Times, Angel Franco, who just retired from the New York Times. He was a war photographer for them.
Mm-hmm.
We have Ricky Flores, who's photographer for Newsday. We have Joe Conso Jr., who is a photographer. He's the most renowned photographer in the world of hip-hop. He's the son of Joe Conso Sr., who was Tito Puente's publicist. And we have, who else? Francisco Reyes, who documented the whole history of the salsa meets jazz at the Village Gate. You could go to his website, Mamboso, Mamboso, and you'll see incredible vintage photographs of documenting the history of salsa meets jazz at the Village Gate. And then there's Edwin Pagan, who is a horror film director. Mm. Believe it or not, there is a New Yorkerican horror film director. And he runs a website called Latino Horror. And he knows, he's the mastermind behind compiling all the photographs and putting them in. They're going to be moving. There's going to be video. I mean, something that I wanted to do for many, many years, but the opportunity never arose, and then the right situation musically and visually has never arisen. I did it once before in a smaller kind of way. We did it a concert at the Museum of Natural History many years ago with my Nanette Ascension, and we had some of the films of Henry Medina, the film archivist, the Latin music film archivist, projected behind us, behind various pieces. And we did it in a primitive way with the primitive technology at the time. But now with all the computer technology that we have available to us, we can do some really interesting things with colors and movement, et cetera, et cetera. So that'll be something that the people will really hopefully be enthralled by, besides the music. I think the music in and of itself is enough, but I really wanted to take it to the next level. And what inspired me? Well, Bill Graham used to do that kind of stuff at the old Fillmore East and the Fillmore
mm-hmm.
West.
Mm-hmm.
The Grateful Dead is playing, and all of a sudden you see this stuff being projected behind them. You know, I've always wanted to do that, and we're going to do that. So it'll be a historic evening on every level. And opening
That's
up
great.
For us will be two great New Yorkerican poets who are legends, La Bruja, who many of you know, worked on mm-hmm. The Multiverse album. We did on the last piece, The Chicken, from Havana to Harlem, 100 mm-hmm. years of Mario Bazan. She's the person that did the spoken word there on that piece. And Rich Villar, mm-hmm. who is the director of Capicua Poetry Collective in Brooklyn. So it'll be a very, very fascinating evening, and we hope you all come out. And it's free. It's free. So.
Great. And that's August 10th at 7:30 at Damrosch Park, also known as Lincoln Center, the outdoors. So, you know, there's a lot of great free things out there. This is one of them. You know, when we listen to the radio, it's free. When we stream Spotify, it's almost free. When we go on YouTube, it's free. Jazz on the Tube is free. But, you know, I always say you get the things you pay for. You get the things you deserve, ultimately. And if you want great music in this world, when something like this project West Side Story Reimagined comes along, this is a time to I would say just buy it. You know, it's a vote. You know, it's a contribution to the cause. It's a vote for good music. It's a way of supporting this kind of music. And in this case, because of the generosity of all the parties involved, it's a way of supporting Puerto Rico. So West Side Reimagined, we're going to have the link right underneath this interview, so you can just click on it and buy. I just think this is a no-brainer. And if you know, and the good cause aside, the music, I will say, is spectacular. And Bobby's given you this incredible background to it now. So as you're listening to it, you know, if you're a serious music fan, you know you have to listen to something at least a dozen times to begin to get all the, you know, the juice out of it. And now you've got a guide to follow to track some of the things that are going on in this amazing extended composition. So Bobby,
the great thing is that this is like, you know, in this day and age when CD sales are going down, this really is a commemorative thing because it's a box set. It's two CDs, Act 1, Act 2. Get about an hour and 20 minutes worth of music. Not only that, you get a 16-page booklet inside. It has all these rare photographs of Maestro Bernstein, and then as well as photographs of us performing it at Dizzy's. So you get a lot of bang for your buck. And if you go to the Jazz Heads website right now, jazzheads.com, you get the CD at a very reduced price, cheaper than you would get it at Amazon.com. But you can also get it at Spotify and at iTunes if you're just into downloading. But okay. I would suggest people get the hard copy of it with the CD because of the booklet, et cetera, you know, because just the booklet in and of itself is worth the price of it. And as I said before, the money, most of the money goes to Puerto Rico for the musicians, specifically through the Jazz Foundation of America, because the musicians on the island are really suffering. Many have lost their houses, their apartments. Some of them can't pay rent anymore. Many have lost their instruments. And as you well know, Ken, we back in, what was it, I think October, we did that big benefit last year.
Yep.
And we raised about $10,000, $11,000 for Puerto Rico. And when the Jazz Foundation went down there and distributed the money, it was very heartfelt. So, but things are not normal in Puerto Rico. Although Puerto Rico has been out of the news lately, and that's mainly because for some reason, the current administration finds different ways of obfuscating everything by doing even crazier stuff, making more outlandish statements. Don't forget about the island, because we are Americans. We've been Americans since 1917, and we've contributed so much to the culture of this country. And like our Cuban brothers and sisters say, if it wasn't for the Puerto Rican community of New York and the island, Cuban music wouldn't even exist in the United States. So that's just one example. So,
and you know, I can tell you all from experience that when New Orleans had its terrible catastrophe, there was a lot of attention initially, and then after a year, it pretty much died down, and then it became a battle, an ongoing, endless battle to keep New Orleans in people's consciousness. And it took a long time for New Orleans just to get on its feet. I can tell you, even as late as 2010, it was not certain that city was really going to survive. You know, it was still really struggling. Now, things are better now, but it's more than 10 years later. And, you know, Puerto Rico has added challenges. It's an island. It's hard to reach. You know, at least in New Orleans, people could get in a van and drive down there and help out for a week or a weekend. It's not so easy to do that in Puerto Rico. So part of it is raising money, and then part of it is keeping the pressure on our politicians to do what they're supposed to be doing, because this is American territory. These are American citizens. And, you know, we want Puerto Rico, the government does, because it's so strategically located. It's literally at the gateway of the Caribbean. And so, you know, we've kept that country for our purposes. We've kept that island for our purposes. We've used it for all sorts of other things. And now it's time to help our own, you know. So this getting this CD, get it as a gift too, you know. Give it to people who you know love music and may not be familiar with Latin music, or people that you know love Broadway tunes. They might really get off on hearing this great classic reimagined. Maybe something for your kid's school or your grandkid's school or for the library. I mean, this work of art, besides being a work of art that stands on its own two feet, is also projects an important message right now. So I hope everybody will just get it. You know, you know you're going to waste that amount of money tomorrow on nothing. So you might as well get something lasting that, that can give you pleasure for the rest of your life. So, hey, Bobby, thank you so much for taking the time and going behind the scenes and explaining some of what went into making this.
Oh, thank you so much. I'd like to also mention some of the other arrangers. Takao Heisho, who is, you'll hear him on the recording playing the minor percussion on the album, and he did an incredible job. The rumble, you'll never hear the whole album is, you'll never hear West Side Story like this ever again, but he did on the rumble is amazing. And I believe I mentioned Andrew Neasley, Jeremy Fletcher, Jim Marlowe, Matt Wong, Danny Rivera, Nico Seabold, I just mentioned Takao, Jeff Lederer, and Nate Sparks. So those are the nine arrangers, and I was kind of like Dr. Frankenstein, supervising everything and putting it all together. So there's a lot of me in there because I edited and took things out and put things in and et cetera, you know. So, but the playing on this, you know, the great thing about this is a live album, ladies and gentlemen. It's done live at Dizzy's. Some of you saw it live streamed. So this is no joke. The virtuosity of the musicians, and my hat to all of them, and the arrangers, it was just fabulous. And now, you know, it's completely mixed and mastered. So it's pristine. So. And if you were there that night, you can hear yourselves applauding. So you're on the recording.
Then you got to get it. Hey, I want to just make a little correction. Mamboso is mamboso.net, mamboso.net. And
thank
definitely
you,
we're checking. Yeah, I didn't know that myself. And then, but the most important thing is go to jazzheads.com. Can people pre-order if it's before the 20th?
Yeah, you can get. That's one of the exclusive things that Jazz has. You can get it right now from Jazz has before it goes worldwide on July 20th. You can get it. It's kind of been on the down low, but
okay.
Now that I'm saying it, you know, so you'll save a substantial amount from getting it if you get it at Amazon. You know,
great.
So if you get it directly from Jazz has. And also, I'd like to let you know, because people are always asking me about, and I could go on and on about the show West Side Story, but if you really want to find out the backstory of West Side Story, you can get this book that came out last year called West Side Story as Cinema, The Making and Impact of an American Masterpiece. So the main title is West Side Story as Cinema, and it's written by Ernesto R. Acevedo Munoz. Ernesto R. Acevedo Munoz. And so if you're really into the whole minutia of things, it's printed by the University Press of Kansas.
Okay.
So it's a fantastic book. I got this book, actually, Elena gave me this book as a birthday present and as a Christmas present. And it's fabulous. It has so many details about the backstory of the show, the amount of money they spent on the show, the costuming. One of the incredible things about the movie was the way the lighting designers used light and also colors to accentuate everything in the movie. And I'll leave it at that, but it's just fascinating. There's a whole chapter just on that. There was a lot of thought put into everything, the lighting, the shading, et cetera. Every frame of the movie was thought of in a very, very precise detail. So from that standpoint, it's amazing in and of itself. So, you know what happens when something becomes very popular and it goes into the mainstream? It almost becomes a parody of itself. Because when you say to people, West Side Story, first thing out of people's mouth, oh, yeah, Maria, you know, that kind of a thing. But people need to look at this as one of the highest examples of the integration of theater, imagery, sound, music, lighting, and also dialogue ever in American art. So I check out the book. Besides getting the CD, I think you'll be very, very, very pleased.
Good. And get the CD first while you still have some money left.
Definitely. Help Puerto Rico.
So that's
and
jazz.
We're hoping hopefully it'll get nominated for a Grammy. And maybe we'll win this, you know, finally, hopefully, you know, I'm very hopeful of that, because especially for the musicians, they deserve it. It's a testimony to musicianship, the whole album, and
absolutely,
to Maestro Bernstein.
Absolutely. Yeah, just what ran through my mind as I was listening to the live stream from Dizzy's was a masterpiece. This is a masterpiece. This is going to stand the test of time. Well, great. So guys, you can go to jazzheads.com, and you can order it and get a good price. Get the physical one. You'll be glad you have it. All right, Bobby, thank you so much for the time, as always, and thank you for bringing this beautiful work to us. I can't even imagine how much went into it, but now it exists for all of us to enjoy forever, and I really appreciate it.
Great, and what I'll do also is, I talked about some of these hidden nuanced things that are in West Side Story. I wrote an article, a 4,000-word essay for the National Institute of Latino Policy on all of the hidden things that are in West Side Story. So I'll send that to you, and you can share it with your listeners if they want to. You can put up the link and check it out, because you'll be very, very surprised of all of the hidden things that are in West Side Story that most people miss out on. So that's an additional thing that I'll send to you, so that you can share it with all your viewers and listeners.
Great. I'll make sure they get it as soon as you send it to me. Well, thanks, Bobby, and we'll talk again soon.
And hopefully we'll see everyone on August 10th at Lincoln Center, out of doors, 7:30, Damrosch Park in New York City. And also, if you get to miss that and you're in the Washington, D.C. area, January 18th, we will be performing it at the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C.
So,
something to look forward to.
That's great. Okay. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you, Ken. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please share it. That's how we grow. And remember to subscribe to jazzonthetube.com, the internet's largest collection of free, streamable, classic jazz videos.